And I wanted to thank you all for registering and attending this morning. I am Mary Ellen Walsh. I'm the Cultural Resources Compliance Manager with the State Historic Preservation Office. I've been in this role since 2018, at SHPO since 2013. I did all the FCC reviews between 2013 and 2021, and then Caroline decided she wanted to have her chance at it. Usually it goes to the new person that comes on board. And I actually held on to it after we got two other people because I was wanted to get it down and make sure I had everything correct for everybody. Wanted to also acknowledge that our office is located on the ancestral lands of the Ottom, Pipash, Hopi, Zuni, and several other tribes. And there are 22 federally recognized tribes in Arizona, and you all need to be aware of that. And I see we have tribal members joining us today. Part of what you're going to hear in our conversation has to do with some direct conversations we've had with tribes, with the Tribal Historic Preservation Offices, about what is missing in these presentations. And I will ask tribal members to put in chat things that they want to discuss as well, and you will have the opportunity to say some things at the end as well, if you don't mind. Caroline, go ahead and introduce yourself and let's get this rolling.
Finding the unmute button is fun. Good morning, everyone. So my name is Caroline Quibaja. I started doing the FCC project reviews in the spring of 2022, taking over from Mary Ellen. I appreciate your patience as I've learned about the review process for these projects. And over time, we've noticed several inconsistencies and issues that impede the review process. We've also made some changes recently that we hope will help to streamline the process and make it a more pleasant experience all around. That being said, let's get into it. So, with this workshop, we mean to open a dialogue to clarify what the SHPO is looking for in reviews, provide some updates to our review process, address some ongoing problems that we are seeing in submissions, and discuss some concerns that have been raised by our tribal partners. Please put any questions you may have in the chat or hold them until the end of the presentation. We should have about 20 minutes at the end to answer any questions. To get started, the regulatory framework for these reviews includes Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, two programmatic agreements for the effects of certain undertakings on historic properties and for the co-location of wireless antennas. And we would like to put in here that Section 106 is a continuing process and not a checkbox on your form. So please be aware of that, and that it may take some back and forth between us and tribes and you, the proponent. Some of the undertakings are also completed under the Arizona Antiquities Act for undertakings on state, county, and municipal lands, and certain local historic preservation ordinances. The cities of Phoenix, Tempe, Tucson, Mesa, Scottsdale all have ordinances that are variations on the same thing of historic preservation. And lastly, the SHPO has issued guidance on the submission of undertakings in Arizona that can be found on our website and include our survey report standards. Our survey report standards, the interim SHPO ASM reporting guidance from 2019, the FCC guidance update from July of 2018. Verizon actually has a historic preservation treatment plan for private lands that was finalized in 2018. We have our SRSF template form.
That's a survey report summary form.
Yes. Thank you. That was also published in 2018, and our new consultation form that we actually updated on Friday for 2023. And so if you don't have that, I would grab that off of our website now, because that is what we were going to be requiring from now on. So, oh yes, and SHPO also, sorry.
And I was going to say, and ASM site definitions are always in play for projects on state, county, municipal land, and private land. We use those definitions for private land specifically, just so you know, since a lot of our projects are on private land here. And the last update was 1995. I believe there might be revisions in the near future. Also, look at SHPO guidance point number 5 regarding the need for resurvey of previously surveyed lands. It's a guidance document. It's not saying you don't need to survey or you do need to survey. If the survey is 20 years or older, you at least need to go out and check on those sites if they're in direct APE. Next slide.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. All right. So for our, we would like to clarify what we mean by historic property, specifically in regards to FCC projects. So SHPO defines historic properties as districts, sites, buildings, structures, and objects that are either listed on the National Register, determined eligible for listing on the National Register, unevaluated for listing on the National Register, and specifically for FCC, because we accept Class 1 information alone, sites that have not been formally reviewed by the SHPO.
Basically, we are treating them as eligible for the purposes of all FCC undertakings.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing to note is that the Hohokam canals in the Phoenix Basin are determined eligible under Criterion D. This was... this determination came out in July of 2022, and these canals are not actually listed on the National Register, but they are determined eligible. This has come up and has been a little confusing in the past. So
make sure during your background research, you have the canal layer on in as site. All projected canals, doesn't matter if they've been ground truthed or not.
All right. So submission packets to the SHPO should include 3 parts. We require the FCC SHPO consultation form, the FCC form 620 for new towers or 621 for co-locations, and the result reports. It should be noted that any Class 3 reports should be submitted as a separate document. These are archived in our system and we need them as a separate document. So the form 620 is used for new construction and replacement towers. Form 621 should be any co-locations with ground disturbance or without ground disturbance. And please review the PA specifically for co-locations on whether consultation is required or not, because not all of them are. So to start off with, the FCC SHPO consultation form was updated in January of 2023. It is specific to Arizona, and the changes include project description, locational information, the APEs, the finding of effect, and tribal consultation language. Tribal consultation language specifically has to do with our tribal expertise statement at the end of the consultation form, in which we remind the consultant and the FCC that the views of Indian tribes are based on expertise and information not available and or possessed by our staff, but are critical to informing the Section 106 review process. The consultant or FCC remains responsible for consulting with and considering the views of Indian tribes. We request that consultant provide our office with a summary of any views conveyed by Indian tribes that are not in agreement with SHPO's response. And in doing so, SHPO reserves the right to exercise our responsibility to respond to new information and modify our findings as necessary.
To be clear, part of the consultation process We understand that applicants use the TCNS, you know, that automatic thing where the information goes to tribes, and that tribes are supposed to respond directly to the FCC if they believe there's an adverse effect. But if you hear from tribes that this information is there, we request that you let us know. We also understand that this shouldn't be a checklist kind of thing. The TCNS is just the initial phase of consultation. In our opinion, and we recommend that you should be following up with the tribes at least 30 days after that first notification period has ended, to just to, you know, especially if there are sites in the APE. The concern here is traditional cultural properties, places. We are not experts. The tribes have that information and will let us know if there are concerns. So we do request that you do a good faith effort and follow up with tribes if you haven't heard anything after 30 days.
So a little bit more on tribal consultation. Tribal consultation should be completed. Oh, well, it should be initiated prior to the submittal of any documentation to SHPO. This should include the first round of consultation. So after 30 days of consultation with with tribes, then submit the documentation to SHPO. Please let us know of any concerns that are raised through consultation. And some things to consider are you near or in a traditional cultural property? And is your visual APE large enough to identify traditional cultural properties or historic properties?
We'll discuss this a little bit more in detail, and then I will ask Gila River and Hopi representatives on the call if they want to speak to this as we get towards the end, so they can see whether or not we've covered it completely enough. Next.
Yeah. Apparently it doesn't want to go. Sorry. All right. So the changes that we've made to the SHPO consultation form for new construction, replacement, and co-locations. So for the project description, sorry. Please note whether it's new construction, replacement, or co-locations. If you're dealing with new utility corridors or access routes, and if what type of ground disturbance will be completed. The additional locational information that we require, in addition to the structure address, is the land jurisdiction, the legal location, the USGS quadrangle, and UTM coordinates. For the direct APE, we are requiring not just the acreage, but please give us a description of the dimensions of the project area, the depth of excavation, and include utility corridors, access roads, and staging areas in the description. And so this, the acreage. Yeah.
And all of this should be depicted on your map as well. Your description and your map must match.
For the visual APE, in general, they include the radius that you are going to be looking at. This is the half mile for two towers that are under 200, three quarters of a mile, 1 mile, or 2 miles, depending on the height of your tower. Also consider looking at the Google Earth view. Is there a line of sight from the tower to a major topographic feature or an archaeological site with standing architecture? You may want to expand the visual APE to encompass these types of features and sites.
And the point of this is that the TCPs that most of us do not know about may be these locations of the prominent features or the water sources. So we want to make sure that you can look out at least virtually and just take 2 minutes to do this. And you can, on the SRSF, put those drainages and features, topographic features, into the information under that section of the document, put it into your report in the distance to these resources, so we all have an idea of whether there is a potential traditional cultural property. It helps us talk to the tribes, at least when they have concerns.
We've also made changes to the findings of effect for the direct APE. We still have the no historic properties affected. You should use this if there are no historic properties in the APE, in the direct APE. We have no adverse effect, which to us means that historic properties are present but will not be affected, such as no ground disturbance within an archaeological site or an antenna will be co-located on a historic building. The last one is adverse effect for any project within a historic property where ground disturbance will occur. We have made some changes to our conditional no adverse effect. SHPO may decide at our discretion whether or not to use a conditional no adverse effect. Things that will require monitoring but do not require an adverse effect will be if a project is within the recognized buffer of a historic property or within 50 feet of a projected ancestral canal.
The recognized buffer refers to usually if you're in Phoenix, 250 feet of the site of the reported site boundary. We may or may not use that in other locations, but we're using that as a general standard. There are also archaeological sensitive areas that we don't have site-specific information about that may require monitoring. And we, if there is no site, then we would say conditional no adverse effect.
Mm-hmm. Conditional no adverse effect will no longer be applicable within the site boundaries.
And this is to hopefully minimize the lack of minimize non-compliance issues that we've had over the last couple of years, because at that point we're looking at the development of an MOA, Memorandum of Agreement.
For the visual APE, we haven't changed these ones as much. No historic properties affected is no historic properties in the visual APE. No adverse effect is historic properties are present but will not be affected. An adverse effect is historic properties are present and will be affected. This would have to do with traditional cultural properties or sites that are within that will be affected by the visual APE or by visual effects.
And remember, this is per the FCC guidance. SHPO's response is a single finding of effect for the project as a whole.
For the FCC form 620 and 621, some of the things that we are looking for is the use of the updated 620, 621 forms. They were updated in 2018 as the last revision. We have received forms that were last revised in 2005. One of the major differences is the way tribal consultation results are relayed, and we really like the updated forms better. We also require consistency of information. For instance, the acreage that is on the SHPO consultation form should be the same as in your 620 form or 621 form, and it should be the same as what is in your report. Use the correct consulting parties.
Let me say that we understand this is the TCNS identifies the consulting parties, and there are other tribes from out of the state that are consulted with because they are affiliated ancestrally. And we had questions about whether or not we were seeing Hopi and Navajo Nation response on those TCNSs. Am I right, Caroline?
Yes.
So make sure that you are including Hopi and Navajo Nation, even if they are not part of the TCNS for some reason.
And then we are also looking for the tribal consultation results. why we like the 2018 version. And if you're receiving emails from the tribes, please include them, especially if the response is other, because we don't necessarily know what that other is. It is sometimes that they are delegating to another tribe, or it is they may have concerns, and we really need to know what those are. Other things that we're looking for include the photographs, maps, and plans. These should all be attached to the 620-621 form.
And remember, it's up to you, the applicant consultant, to do the QA/QC. We should not be having to do this consistently. One thing I will add to this is please keep the resumes to 2 pages. Just put your most recent projects up on there. We don't need them to be more than that. It's annoying to have to go through that each time.
A little more info on the consulting parties. You should be consulting with the SHPO, with affiliated tribes from the TCNS system. Also, verify on the government-to-government toolkit that all of the affiliated tribes with your area are included.
That toolkit's on the SHPO website.
Mm-hmm. And it's fabulous. I love it. Also, be aware of who you need to contact with the local governments. There's been some confusion on either the wrong person in the local government being consulted or the wrong local government in general being consulted. If you're within the city of Tucson, you should be consulting with the city of Tucson, Jody Brown from the city of Tucson. Also, you'll be looking at the local historical societies, historic neighborhoods, and the public.
And make sure you're updating your lists of contacts because they have changed, especially Phoenix has changed recently. Tucson changed years ago, and we're still seeing things sent to Allison Deal or even James Mabry. So please, it's your responsibility to update your contacts.
And then we'll get into the results reports. There are 3 types of reports that we accept for these projects. There's a Class 1 report and visual analysis, a Class 3 technical report, and a Class 3 survey report summary form. All 3 of these should include the site file search results that include the as site and the and or the ARO.
Archaeological Records Office at the State Museum.
The National Register Historic Places Information System, the local historic registers, such as for City of Phoenix, City of Scottsdale, Mesa, Tempe, and a few others all have historic registers, GLO records, and historic maps and historic aerials. The presentation of the background research should include for projects, the agency project number, which is the date, a number, and then ASM at the end. It should not be the as site number. It should include the project name and the author and year. The archaeological sites and historic properties should include the agency number, the site or property name, the cultural affiliation, the site type, and the author and year. One note on the search radius versus the APE, applicants are required to review the results of the site file search for projects and cultural resources within a mile radius of the tower location. If the visual APE is 1 or 2 miles, you should expand your record search accordingly.
Again, use your Google Earth for a line of sight for those longer distances, especially.
Under the Class 1 report and visual assessment, the format is a letter report. And you should use it if the area has been previously surveyed.
To current standards.
And if the area is paved, landscaped, or in an area where the ground surface is not visible. We should also note that this information can be submitted as part of the Form 620 or 621 without a Class 1 letter report. But you should, if you do this, you still need to submit the photographs for the visual assessment.
And the site information, all of it has to be in there.
So the Class 3 technical report should be used if you identify archaeological sites within the APE. This should be a technical report.
As a result of a pedestrian survey.
Yes. You should be using the SRSF if you conduct a Class 3 pedestrian survey and no cultural resources were identified, cultural resources were limited to isolated occurrences, or cultural resources were limited to in-use historic structures or historic buildings.
With or without an IO.
With or without an IO. If you do have historic in-use structures or historic buildings, please also include the HISF forms or the HPIF forms.
The HISF is the historic in-use structure form. The other is the historic property inventory form for buildings.
If you have co-locations with a historic building, which the FCC describes as 45 years plus, you will not have to include the HPIF form.
And that is unless the new tower is a construct to the building itself, like a bell tower to a church. That would be a little bit different.
Which brings us to the most common problems that we've been seeing in these submissions. They are either missing certain forms, they may be missing a report, the photographs, tribal responses, public notification, or a municipality response. For the visual assessments, the photographs are not included, or we have heard from the tribes that they want the APE expanded. In Class 1 and Class 3 reports, we've seen incomplete APEs. The APE must include the tower, the access road, and the utility corridors. The incorrect report is used. Class 1 and visual assessments, you should be using the letter report or putting in the information in the 620 or 621 form directly. This includes the site information and the photographs. The Class 3 survey, if there are negative findings, we'll only be accepting the SRSF. And if you have archaeological sites, you should be submitting the technical report. In the reports themselves, the report information is incorrect or incomplete. The SRSF must be completed in full. There should be no blanks. You can use not applicable where appropriate, but that does not mean that you can use it for the environmental setting or the cultural group. These portions of the report do need to be filled out and complete. This demonstrates a knowledge that you understand the area that you're working in and who may have been using or living on the landscape. You should also make sure that there is a complete description of the undertaking in APE. Remember to use to include the access roads and utility corridors in this information. And as stated before, this information should be consistent between the report form, the SHPO consultation form, and the 620, 621 forms.
Before we get to questions, I'll just say a few things. So one of SHPO's roles is to foster professional reporting in all areas of historic preservation. And we find many reports lacking. We do have a consultant that has said that we can use their letter report as an example, and we will be updating the SHPO page before too long with their information of what we'd like to see in these reports. And we understand it's a report documentation and you want a title page and all that. That is perfectly fine. It doesn't need an abstract when you're doing that. The other thing is QA, QC is your responsibility, not ours. We are tired of having to go through these with everybody. 10 years of, you know, telling the same thing over and over again. I had something else. Wanted to make sure that you understand that we have also chatted with the FCC about the requirements that we are talking about in terms of site eligibility or treating sites as eligible for the purposes of an FCC undertaking. We are not going to say that for each one. We are saying it holistically. You have been informed that you should treat all unevaluated resources as eligible for the purposes of FCC consultations. I forget what my other point was, so we can go to questions for now. And then if I can remember it, I will get back to it.
Before we go to questions, are there any comments from any of the tribes on the line?
Not right now.
Several comments. Oh, go ahead, Larry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Stuart.
Couple things just from my own perspective. I find that cell towers proceed with just background research and nothing else. And, you know, I wish there was some sort of regulation that allows or mandates the project proponent to sponsor field visits to these proposed areas. And I say that because, you know, I'm not a good map reader. I need to be on site and look at the entire viewshed of these proposed projects. And, you know, it's one thing to look at something on the map and, you know, the previous recorded sites, but you know, I'm finding that through climate change and erosion, that a lot of sites that, especially on Hopi, you know, haven't been recorded and are now exposed because of wind and elements and the like. So, you know, it's one thing to approve something just using, you know, the background research, but it's another thing to be on site and to be actually, you know, taking a 360 view of what's going to be proposed. And then the other thing kind of in connection to that is the 20-year report date, you know, and for the same reasons, you know, I'm requiring that, at least for Hopi, that any surveys that have been conducted within Hopi tribal boundaries, that if a site or a report is 5 years old, then they have to go out and do a resurvey, you know. And then I forgot the last thing. Maybe I'll think of it when I, I'll hand over the comments to Larry, but those are some of the two things that, you know, it would be great to see happen. And, you know, I guess the last thing, we never hardly hear from FCC, you know, and when we do comment, we don't ever get response back from anyone. So I think that has to change as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. I think one thing that you had mentioned in our conversation previously were qualified personnel. one of the things that we are bound by is that the qualified personnel must meet the Secretary of the Interior standards for archaeology. If they're working on municipal, county, or private lands, they must have a AAA permit. We actually can't enforce anything else, but we recommend that our consultants that are from out of state use local resources when you're doing your research, and especially your field visits. Have somebody local check that you really know what cultural area you are working in. That seems to be the biggest problem on that. With regards to photos, my understanding from the FCC guidance is that there should be photos to and from all eligible resources, 306 that are identified during the research. So if there are field visits, so to do that. So I'm not sure what the tribes get in terms of consultation, but we are seeing photos to and from resources. So that's a concern to me, that if you are not getting that information. And then I'm happy to revisit that 20-year rule. A lot of it depends on, as it's been listed, you know, the changing landscape, what's been done since. That's why I did mention that if there are sites within direct APE, they should certainly be relocated to make sure that they are still within the APE. And if it's been previously disturbed, Arizona has great depth potential. So we require the consultants to consider that those sites may still be intact subsurface. So, but I will ask Catherine about looking at the SHPO guidance point on previously surveyed areas also for consultants. Towers on federal or tribal land, it's the landowner's land jurisdiction that you have to respond to in terms of the survey, whether or not it's necessary. So if Stuart says that 5 years or older requires a new survey, that is the guidance. Larry, did you want to add anything?
Well, a couple things here. Are everybody here are primarily consultants, and it's like we're preaching to the choir again about compliance with TCNS and with the FCC, and I was wondering if the proponents, like Verizon or any of the cell tower, other cell tower sponsors of these projects, are they going to be involved anytime with this session here? Because they should be, they're the ones that have been having the most issues, I guess, with the process about what's going on, you know, conducting ground disturbing activities without monitors as required, are going forward with work before the cultural resources work has been completed. And I think that's a big issue that should be brought up with the consultants, because they need the proponents need to be contacted, they need to be reminded, and they need to be guided through the process so that we don't have this repeated occurrence of not complying with the regs, not with the requirements for the undertaking. And I also have a little bit of concern with the identification of TCPs, of traditional cultural properties, because the reports and the consultants that do these do these surveys, do these class ones, do these class three inventories of these project areas. They're not in tune with what is a TCP and what is not. And when we review here at GRIC, when we do review these undertakings and stuff, we do look at the maps, and we do looking at things like Google Earth and looking at the locations of these areas. And but that doesn't mean that that we could, with that the triage would be necessarily forthcoming with the identification of TCPs to the consultant, something that they should know already. And then we are, then, you know, it's like, yes, there is a TCP here, but, you know, I think that would that be just sufficient enough for the compliance process? It's to identify a TCP, but not coming forth with why it's a TCP.
Right.
And that's an important issue, and I think that it's something more that has to be developed and discussed.
I agree, and that's why we're asking for the consultants to go back to the tribes, asking again if there are any concerns, because as you're aware, the information about TCPs is not out there, nor should it be. So just to know that you have a concern that there is a TCP present is enough for us to change our finding of effect and suggest that consultation continue to minimize effects to a TCP. That's also the reason why we're asking consultants to expand that area for looking at potential TCPs. Many tribes consider any site a TCP. We would like conversation on that part. We can't do that specifically for this undertaking. You know, normally we're talking about specific geographic area, has more to do with the cultural and natural landscape, those things that we don't have names for ourselves, but you would have that information. But certainly more discussion is necessary. And yes, we can do another session with the stakeholders, the proponents like Verizon and all these that are 90% are under Verizon, and there's a few others, Crown and AT&T. We can certainly do another session that we'd also ask the tribes to be at specifically, but it's really the consultant's responsibility, I think, to follow up with their proponents to make sure that these monitoring situations and data recovery, if we ever get to that, are being done before construction. I think that's a big, it's not a checklist for consultants. This is a big, big thing that you have to follow up on.
Thank you.
Thank you. One other thing that I don't think that we put into the presentation, but should be noted, is you should also be sending the class one and class three reports to the tribes for them to use to help review these projects as well.
And I'm going on the assumption that the tribes want them. I know we've heard from Gila River and the four Southern tribes. And you have a Prescott in particular that they're always having to ask for reports. So if you have, especially a class three, send it to them automatically. Don't make them ask for it. Sunday is on here from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community. Do you have any questions or concerns you want to follow up with?
No, just excuse me, to reiterate what the other tribal perspectives were, and to underscore the point that we do need, would like to have a separate consultation meeting with the clients or the proponents, however you could see that happening, if it could happen. And I also want to say that I could see how our consultants might be a little bit intimidated by this request for, you know, considering TCPs. And I just want to say that we're here to help with that. We don't want that to be intimidating or problematic. So you can always talk to us. Of course, we're not going to say why something's a TCP, but we can help with identifying things. And basically, if it looks like a remarkable piece of landscape or landform feature, or even ecological feature, that's when your radar should be going up, that it might also be a TCP. Thank you.
Thank you for that. That was the point I was trying to make as well. There's a question in the chat. Are photos from the unevaluated or not formally evaluated sites within the visual APE required? If they have above ground elements, yes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Mary Ellen, I have another question.
Please.
Did you, earlier in the presentation, in Caroline's presentation, Mary Ellen, did you say that the consultants, the people who are doing the field work would have to meet the standards, the secretary's standards?
They have to meet the Secretary of the Interior standards. That means under the supervision of somebody that is qualified. It doesn't mean that they have to have specific Arizona experience. SHPO is not allowed to enforce that at all. I would like to change it so that at least they have to have a AAA permit, because that at least has some teeth to it. I will look into that. I'm not certain that that's possible either to require it. But specifically, they do have to have the SOI standards. So that's a master's degree. Work under the supervision of somebody with a master's degree.
Go ahead, Mary Ellen.
I was going to say, I do have concerns for, like, when you're working in Phoenix, monitoring. Consultants need to send out somebody with the appropriate experience, because you can't send out a new person looking for canals that has no idea about what a canal or other features will look like. So don't consider monitoring to be a low-end requirement for field work. It should be somebody that has the appropriate knowledge and background, demonstrated experience in the area.
Yeah, I asked that question because some of the consultants, they're using historic architects as the principal who's signing these inventories. And I don't know if they're being supervised or they're considered the supervisor, but it would seem that's counter to what we're discussing here. And I don't know if you've noticed that in any of these reports, but it's concerning. And I was just wondering about how that fits into these guidelines that you provided today.
We will take a closer look at that, Larry, and make sure that whatever archaeology is done is being done by a qualified person. The SOI should be, the architect should be on board when there are buildings involved, obviously, but otherwise the lead should be an archaeologist that's qualified, I agree. So we will make sure to take note of that.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
All right. There are no other questions. Thank you very much for participating today. We will have the PowerPoint and the audiovisual posted later this week, and make certain to send it to the tribes so everybody knows what's going on here at SHPO. We've been trying to make that very transparent, that we are doing much more tribal engagement than we have in the past. It's informal. It's not, obviously, government to government. That's not our requirement. We will continue our discussions with the FCC to ensure that they are responding to tribal concerns. I did talk to Jill Springer last week, and we are trying to set up a meeting. And we will continue keeping you all informed as we hear more information. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Mary
Thank
Ellen, you. One more thing. Mary Ellen, one more thing. You're still planning to have another meeting this afternoon at 2?
Yes. If you'd like to join in again, please do so.
Yeah, I will. I'll come and I'll join that one too. I'll be there.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to help us out with getting the expectations that are needed for better consultation. So thank you to Stuart, Larry, and Sunday. Have a good one.
Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Thank you.